You are listening to episode 71, supporting our LGBTQ youth.
Welcome to Play Therapy Community Podcast, providing connection, information, and inspiration to child therapists all around the world. Here's your host, a licensed psychotherapist, a registered play therapist, and my mom, Jackie Flynn.
It is important to know that this episode was recorded before COVID-19, so you may hear mention of opportunities no longer available.
I remember in grad school thinking about how much I didn't know that I didn't know. It can be absolutely overwhelming to think about. There's a lot that I didn't know, and there is a lot that I don't know, so I love learning. So if you roll back the years to right before I was licensed as a licensed mental health counselor here in the state of Florida, I remember answering the phone, and it was a potential client, the parent calling, and their request was to see if I could fix their child from being gay. If I could fix their child from being gay, I didn't know what to say. I was literally left speechless for a few seconds. There was a pause in the conversation, and then I stumbled upon my words. I felt just a wave of emotions as I thought about the impact of that question, as I thought about the pain that entailed. I wish that I hadn't more training in how to respond and to help reach that family and help them get the support they need. Now, I did refer to a therapist in the area that I love dearly and is great and specializes in helping our LGBTQ youth. That's just incredible. But I had the parent on the phone, and I think it was an opportunity to share some compassion, to share some understanding, something. But I just didn't know what to say. So it was my responsibility at that time to learn more. Now, since then, I have had training. Thank goodness. It's definitely an area that I need to learn more about. But I reached out to Samantha Willis. And if you don't know about Samantha Willis, I cannot wait for you to hear the love and the wisdom, the resources that she has to offer. She's incredible. At the time of this recording, I believe she's a doctoral student. She has lots of training opportunities as well. She's one of the most knowledgeable people, in my opinion, on the planet when it comes to helping our LGBTQ youth. In this episode, well, I won't spoil it, so you'll hear it as it goes on, but she shares some really good stuff. She helps you know what to say, what to do, who to reach out to. Clients feel safe with her. They feel safe enough to be their authentic selves. They share her information with friends and with other people that they know that need her support. So this conversation with her literally brought me to tears as I thought about how many lives she's supported over the years and potentially saved as a result of her courage to be there when no one else in their whole lives are. So let's listen to my conversation with Samantha Willis. This episode is brought to you by EMDR and Play Therapy Integration Support. Are you an EMDR trained therapist that works with children and teens? I'd love to help you integrate play therapy techniques throughout all 8 phases so that your child and teen clients can fully experience the immense healing power of EMDR therapy. Visit JackieFlynnConsulting.com to check out my free webinars, EMDRIA-approved courses, certification opportunities, case consultation options, individual and group, and much more. Children are not miniature adults, so working with them in a developmentally appropriate way can make a world of difference. Again, visit JackieFlynnConsulting.com. Hi, Samantha.
Hi, Jackie.
Thank you so much for being on the Play Therapy Community Podcast. You know, I'm a huge fan of yours, especially after your recent appearance on the Innovative Child Therapy Symposium. You are a wealth of information.
Thank you, Jackie. That's so kind.
Well, let me have you. I'd like to just jump right in, and I want to have you just introduce yourself, tell people who you are and what you do.
Okay. My name is Samantha Willis. I'm an LPC from Alabama. I'm also board certified and a registered play therapist. I have been working with children and teens and their families and also adults for many years, really specializing in the LGBTQ plus community. And I also teach continuing education as well.
Mm-hmm. I have to say, Lynn Louise Wonder, she pointed me in your direction, and there's not a lot of people that like you out there that have this amount of information. In fact, I have to say, I've never met anybody with your vast amount of information. So I'm really excited for you to just give us a little taste of what you have to offer. But I know you have a lot of trainings too that are just incredible.
Oh, thank you, Jackie.
Oh, you're welcome. And at the end of the episode, we'll definitely mention your training so people can get more information as they need it. But let's just jump right in. Today, we're going to look at the 5 important tips for clinicians working with clients in the LGBTQ plus community. So let's just get rolling with what's the first tip?
Okay, great. Yeah, the first one I have is to be an affirming ally. Mm-hmm. I think it's really important to let your clients know that you'll affirm them without any conditions. And I think this is true for everything we do in counseling, is to be affirming to all of our clients, but especially with the LGBTQ plus community, because they might not be getting that anywhere else in their life.
Yes. Yeah, they feel rejected, and there's not that unconditional positive regard that we can offer.
Absolutely. And, you know, it could be the difference between life and death, really, for some clients we work with. So I think, you know, that this kind of affirming ally position can start before a client even comes out to you. Mm-hmm. So one thing I like doing is in my office, just have a rainbow sticker just framed or on my door or something. Mm. And when young children come into my office, they're like, what does this mean? Mm-hmm. Everybody's welcome here.
Oh, gosh, it gives me chills. It sounds very safe, very much like I'm fine just as I am. And I can trust this person. I can trust them with some stuff that I can't necessarily tell or share with anyone else.
Absolutely. And Jackie, when I put that up, I had about, I think I counted within 2 weeks, I had 6 clients come out to me.
Oh my goodness.
As soon as I put that up. And it was just, it was life-changing, really. you know, and it changed my career because then clients will tell their friends, hey, I go to somebody who is affirming. You know, she even has a rainbow sticker in her office. I don't think that's any kind of grand statement. I think that it's really just being a good counselor with unconditional positive regard, like you said.
That's so good. Now there's going to be a lot of us are going to run out and get like a rainbow sticker. I know I'm going to put one in my office. Right. It's that symbolism. And when symbols can go way further than where words can go, but that like, oh, she's safe. She isn't going to judge me. She isn't going to reject me, and I can talk to her. So just putting that rainbow up in your office or on your door, like it gave people the courage to kind of share what it was that they've been kind of keeping secret parts of themselves.
Exactly. And, you know, and for clinicians who work in inpatient settings, or they might be going in home, if you have some kind of name tag, just get a small rainbow sticker and put it on that name tag. Mm. And then people will know. So you can have it on your person too.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of think of things as unapologetically affirming, you know, because I think you need to let your clients know they're safe. So when we're putting together or profiles for places like Psychology Today, mm-hmm. let your potential clients know, let the community know. And I think we really don't need to shy away from that. because I think if anything, it's going to help our business, not hurt it, because we care.
Yes. Yeah. So really kind of being upfront that this is something that I'm passionate about helping everyone, being all inclusive, not in any way turning people away, but accepting, and that just an image of a rainbow can send that message.
Right. Absolutely.
Oh, I love that. That's a simple little tweak that, I mean, you just said it, just it could be the difference between life and death. There's this really sad reality that there's a higher suicide rate yes. in the community. But when people feel trapped, when they feel that hopeless feeling of continuous rejection or shame or some of the really tough things that comes along with people that aren't affirming.
Right. And, you know, I think the sad thing is, Jackie, we can't even know. We know the suicide rate's higher, but when people go assess these situations, there isn't actual research that confirms the large numbers. We know that it's high. And so maybe we'll get to a point where we know what those numbers are in the future.
Yeah. So the data isn't really spot on just because if people aren't saying you can't, you have no way of gauging of whether that was the cause or if that was related, or is that even looked at as part of it when they're doing the investigation or the just kind of keeping the numbers. Wow. I never thought of that.
That's a big issue with the data.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So number one tip is be affirming.
Yes.
And get a rainbow in your office.
Yes. Yes. So as soon as they walk in, they know. Mm-hmm. And that's so amazing to me. What a big difference it made. I didn't realize what a big difference it would make until I did.
Wow. Well, I mean, as therapists, we're trained to be empathic and really try to see the world through the client's eyes as well. And imagine if you had this feeling of like, I'm not sure if this person is safe to share my real story with, to show the real me. I'm not sure if there'll be a point of a source of rejection or another point of pain. But then you see the rainbow and that one symbol, like, oh, she gets it. How very powerful is that?
Right. And even little kids who might not know what the rainbow represents, mm-hmm. as soon as they hear those words, it means everyone is welcome no matter what. Mm. I think that brings a sense of safety.
Oh, yes. Yeah, everything's an intervention.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Right from the artwork and the comments that we make.
Yes.
Very cool.
Okay, let's talk about the second tip.
All right, the second tip for clinicians, what they need to know.
Okay, so be a safe space for your client, whether you're meeting in person or for telecounseling sessions. Mm-hmm. You need to create an atmosphere of the hour of the session that's safe and secure.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes it's a space to laugh. Sometimes it's a space to cry. Mm. So it's just what we do as clinicians anyway, is create that little bubble of safety for an hour. Because yeah. I find that, you know, a lot of clients, if I'm working with, you know, a child or a teenager in the LGBTQ plus community, that might be the only hour of their week mm-hmm. where they are being affirmed.
Yeah.
Where they are in a safe space and they can say or do anything within that hour, as long as it's not hurting someone.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think it's so important for, you know, you as a clinician to bring that safety into their life.
Yeah. I think when, you know, even like when we look at say like the polyvagal theory and the importance of feeling that, just in your nervous system, feeling that sense of safety, then you're able to kind of communicate and express the things that you need to express. You're able to lean into those feelings, whether they're positive or negative. There's really no, I don't want to say positive or negative, because there's no right or wrong, no good or bad when you're in a safe space. There just is. And letting clients just kind of be who they are. Wow, what a, it's just a great concept of you're okay just as you are. Show me what you have and let me help.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you just want that big sigh of relief as they walk in your office. A lot of times you're like, oh, I'm so tired from my week, and trying to, you know, in a lot of cases they might be trying to be someone they're not.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if, let's say, it's someone who lives with their family and they haven't come out to their family yet.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really important for them to have that space to be themselves.
Yes. Yeah. I've had people tell me before that there, no one in the whole world knows I was the first person that they ever told. And what an honor that is, to be the person that they feel safe enough to share that with. But then on the flip side, you think about, they can't be truly themselves. They can't be that just amazing, authentic them. They got to kind of put on this mask, and how exhausting and draining and feeling trapped that must be.
Yes, absolutely. And I feel like we can help them with that process, so we're not the only person who knows in the future, and they can work through how they're feeling about it and process the environment around them. And we'll get to that. That's number four, talking about kind of that process. But I think it's important to be able to be that safe space for them.
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime and afterward. And I think one thing, you know, I want clinicians to know about this is, there have been times I have had parents actually punish their child by not allowing them to come to counseling. Okay. And this has happened multiple times. You know, I'm in the Deep South. So this has happened. And so I kind of guard that now and talk up front, you know, with guardians I work with, and discuss, you know, what's appropriate and what's not as far as letting their child actually come to counseling.
Oh my goodness. I've like never experienced that. That sounds that's in many cases could be their lifeline.
Right.
The one space where they can, you know, safe space where they can be themselves, and to have that be a punishment for whatever it is that they're being punished for. Oh, that's heartbreaking.
Right. Yeah. You know, I do find that Generation Z is very resourceful. and so they, you know, they work through it, and I'd let them know I'm going to give them that support so that doesn't happen anymore. Because, you know, I think that's really borderline abusive if they have that 1 hour a week they feel safe, and then to take that away from them.
Yeah,
you know, that's not an appropriate punishment. That's not a consequence for anything. Counseling never needs to be seen as a punishment. So I think one thing we can do as clinicians is upfront have a conversation with parents. I've only seen this with my clients who are in the LGBTQ+ community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and also discussing with a parent what affirming means, because, you know, I live in the Bible Belt.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times I feel that parents might, you know, or any kind of guardian might believe that affirming means that I'm going to push some agenda on my clients.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not the case at all. I'm going to allow them to be themselves. That's what that
means. Just provide the good therapy to help them process through the tough stuff and recognize their resources and all of the good stuff that therapy has to offer. But so the education component for parents is a biggie.
Absolutely. And actually, that's the next tip I have.
Okay.
To give tools and resources.
Okay, so that's number three.
Yes. So find local resources for your clients and their families. You know, I found that sometimes it's a little bit of an underground search. There's not always all the information online you would expect there to be,
mm-hmm.
depending on where you live. And so you really need to get connected within your community.
Yeah.
Some communities actually have organizations where it's affirming companies in your community all getting together and discussing, you know, what they do and what, you know, like a networking opportunity to find out what your resources in your community are and who's affirming, and,
yeah,
you know, try to.
As clinicians, I think sometimes as clinicians, we hear the word networking and we think of, oh, this is a good way for us to find referral sources or to build up our business. But it goes way deeper than that. If we can truly connect with others in the community that are helpers, whether they're, you know, licensed mental health counselors or whether they're, other professionals, doctors or anybody that could support our client, then we are then able to help our clients at a deeper level. So I think that networking it's really kind of like in the ethical range, when, especially if you're in private practice, to be able to just get a good referral source and know who can be there for your client when you need to have certain needs met.
Yes, absolutely. You know, especially like trying to find doctors, I found was very challenging at first, until I found a couple who are extremely affirming. I look for referrals from my clients that aren't just accepting, but affirming. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want to just hear from somebody, well, I will work with the LGBTQ+ community. I will work with the transgender community. Yeah. You know, I want to hear, this is what I want to do.
The passion. You want to know that they truly care in a deep way.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's been some research in my community that has been very harmful to the LGBTQ+ community. So I want to know before sending a client somewhere that it's not going to cause trauma to them. Because in some cases, some of the research that's being done in the U.S. is harmful.
Mm-hmm. Yikes, that is a big consideration. So, yeah, I guess that's something you have to be aware of and not get in that desperate mode of, let me just find somebody, like kind of throw something at the wall and see where it lands. Really kind of look at they have the best interest of your client.
Right. Absolutely. And, you know, I think it's important to find resources for families as well. I have a lot of clients' parents, you know, or guardians who might not understand the LGBTQ+ community and they want to learn more. So just going on PFLAG's website and finding local meetings, because sometimes those particular meetings will be in rural areas too. So you're not just going to find it in big cities. So family members can go to meetings and meet with other people who are going through the same thing.
Oh, love that. I love that. And be able to kind of bounce ideas off each other or just have that feeling of like, I'm not the only one that has these questions or having this experience, and help them through the adjustment of whatever it is as well.
And sometimes finding groups for your clients too can be challenging. And, you know, I've definitely had the experience before where there wasn't a safe place to send my clients. So I started a group. And so, you know, and it was kind of like, you know, pay if you can, so I can help pay for the space.
Mm-hmm.
Because I just want a little extra support, because a lot of my clients have never necessarily met somebody else in the community. Or, you know, especially if they're in the transgender community, they say, well, I've never met anybody, and they just have online resources. And so I think part of what we can do as clinicians is kind of break that down and discuss what is real and what is not real, what we find online. Oh. So that's another resource we can give to our clients, is discussing that.
Yeah. So you couldn't find a group, so you created one, which is like that quote, be the change that you want to see in the world. And then you had to pay if you can, so you could cover costs, but you just made a space to where they could just be who they are and meet other people that they could connect with and relate to and just join in that safety of, I'm okay, I'm fine just as I am. Wow. That's amazing. I'm so glad that you're doing this work.
Well, I'm trying. And, you know, I just feel like I'm one of the only ones who really markets myself for working with the community. And so I'm trying to kind of, Yeah, sift through the waters of, okay, well, you know, where do I send overflow clients to? You know, who is safe? Because safety is so important. I take every client so seriously because I feel like, you know, as we were talking about before, there is so much suicidality within the community.
Yeah.
We have to take it very seriously. And, you know, and clinicians need to be very careful if they do have a full caseload or for some reason they can't take this client, to let them know the reason why and to let them know they're not discriminated.
Oh, so it's not another source of rejection.
Right. Oh. Absolutely.
Can you say that one more time, Samantha? I feel like that point isn't necessarily, I think sometimes people do it unknowingly. You know, they just, you know, don't respond back or they'll, you know, for whatever reason, but the importance of letting someone know that, hey, I'm not taking your case because of anything about you. It's just my schedule's too full, or I don't feel like I can fully meet your needs. But however, here's a good referral source of someone who can.
Right. And connect them to people who you know to be safe, mm-hmm. I think is extremely important. Because I've heard from so many clients, I've heard so many stories because, you know, in Alabama, there's conversion therapy and there's so many stories of sending people off to religious camps and things of the sort. They might not be exactly conversion therapy, but very close.
Mm-hmm.
And so sending people to places that are safe. I've had clients who have been very traumatized by other counselors or rejected by counselors.
Oh.
And it hurts to see it.
Yes.
And it makes me so hyper aware of how resilient the community is that they're trying again.
Mm. Yeah, they're right there with you. They're trying to find somebody who is safe, even after they've had the pain. I do think that classifies as a trauma. If the person you're going to is then rejecting and kind of just perpetuating what you're going to them for, that's traumatic. That's really distressing.
Right. I've definitely heard a lot by many, many clients that they've been going to a counselor for multiple years and have not received a letter for HRT, hormone replacement therapy, when it was promised within 3 months. Oh. And without, you know, without severe diagnoses to kind of justify why they don't have a letter, without signs of them trying to get medication for the client, without any of these clear signs, it really makes you wonder their motivation for continuing to work with these clients without providing them what they promised them.
Yeah, yeah. There's an ethical piece in there for sure.
Right. And there's so many great counselors too, Jackie. I'm not saying that. There are so many who are so affirming and lovely with clients.
Mm-hmm. I would say, and it's all a matter of perception and who you're exposed to, but definitely in from my perception, my reality, I've seen way more counselors that were affirming and just accepting than not. But to that one person that goes to that therapist that, and they have an experience that's rejecting, that's their reality. That's their whole world. And the fact that they would then have that kind of courage to seek out another therapist, that's beautiful. And to be that therapist that can do something different and can help them, oof, that's big.
Right. And I think that's a great point, Jackie. It only takes one. Mm-hmm. It only takes one counselor who's not affirming. So I think that's, you know, what we start seeing. Well, okay, well, this client was really hurt.
Yeah.
And so we do need to give credit to all the amazing counselors who are out there.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. Because it can be some heavy work sometimes, but it's definitely well needed, I think. Mm-hmm. So the third one is just sharing those resources.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I think you provided some free downloads for this episode of some resources.
Yes, I did. So I have one specifically just for the whole LGBTQ+ community, and then I have one specifically for transgender, non-binary, and gender expressive resources, because that's a totally different kind of resource list.
Mm-hmm. And then for those of you listening to this episode, you can find those resources in the show notes at playtherapycommunity.com. So just look for this episode in the search, and you'll just search for Samantha Willis, and you'll find her episode that has those links for the downloads in there. So what's the fourth tip for clinicians working with the...
The fourth one might very well be the most difficult. This is to be a mediator. Mm-hmm. So to hold protective space, safe space for a client to come out or have conversations with their family or whoever in their life they're wanting to come out to.
Yeah.
So I think the most important thing from my experience that I've learned, and I'll be honest with you, Jackie, I went through some trial of error of trying to find the perfect way to do this that works for the most people. And the most important thing is to talk it out in detail with your client before you bring their family in. I found that with this method, I really get, you know, really good results. So I learn about their family. I might know their family, you know, depending on the age of the client, maybe I don't. And to learn kind of their family's stance on the LGBTQ plus community, is kind of different coming out, you know, if someone's transgender, even more difficult if they're non-binary, because there's a big psychoeducation piece there with non-binary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I'd say go into this with as many facts, as much resource. And that's why I provided that resource list, two separate lists for all the listeners, because I think it's important to go into those meetings with things that digestible pieces, you know, websites or journal articles where families can just read it and have a greater understanding.
So having the resources there, but you're saying that before you even meet with the family, you really educate yourself from the client's perspective of who's who, what are some of their belief systems, and how the client may expect they may respond, or kind of some past experiences. Is that what you're talking about in terms of getting to know the situation?
Yes, absolutely. You know, to the point of doing role playing, writing scripts, I think it's important to practice.
Yeah.
I know it sounds kind of overly prepared in a way, instead of having an organic conversation. But it's important to remember this could be, it could potentially be the most defining moment in this client's life.
Oh.
So I never take it lightly. Mm-hmm. I have a huge obligation to my client. I'll actually get a little nervous before these sessions, and I usually block off a good 2 hours just to make sure that I have enough time and that my client's going to be safe when they leave my office.
Mm-hmm.
And to have a conversation with your client beforehand, because they could spring it on you in the middle of a family session and just come out to their parent. And I really don't think that's a good idea under most circumstances. Mm-hmm. Any kind of grand way of coming out might really harm your client.
So you want to be prepared and have it very, very thought through as much as possible.
Exactly. And with kindness for the family member in consideration too, because I'm going to be validating their feelings also, because that's part of the process. Of course, that's going to be difficult for them to learn something. And, you know, there are always going to be those family members who say, oh, I knew. Mm-hmm. And then they'll talk about, you know, a story when the client was three or, you know, something. But I think I'm at the point now where I can kind of predict how it's generally going to go. But it did take a long time to get there. And a lot of learning experiences, I'll put it that way, of, you know, what is the way to keep this client safe, to keep their relationship intact, to provide, you know, the most support I can, while them just having a genuine conversation with their family. you know, because a lot of the process is going to be them doing the work, mm-hmm. but they're so prepared for it. You're there to answer any questions and to be supportive and provide that psychoeducation piece. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times, you know, the family's going to not, if they're in your space, they're not going to be in any kind of higher position than your client. Mm-hmm. So the client's going to know that space more than their parent will, more than likely. And so it will be kind of neutral territory, I think, is really important too.
That neutrality of just being right. able to put the information out there and know that there's going to be some, I guess, containment to it. It's not going right. to be out of that, like any kind of explosive or anything that, you know, for the most part, you said you've had some trial and error, and I can only imagine, like, gosh, the courage that took for you to continue this work, because it's anything but easy, but it seems like a labor of love, really.
It is. And, you know, I mean, I think that with counseling, we just have to keep trying. And if we're too comfortable, we're not doing something right.
That's so good. That is so good. I need to write that down. So really kind of being that mediator. I think about too, like if you are role playing, if you're really going through and picking apart the pieces and learning, like the hardest part about it is kind of like the unknown and the unfamiliarity. But once you do the role playing and you do all that kind of research with your client about what might to expect, then it's not so unknown anymore. And right. sure, there are some unknown pieces, but it's not nearly at the magnitude as it would have been if you go in it cold.
And honestly, Jackie, the thing that's so rewarding about this work is more times than not, it's a very positive experience. Mm-hmm. And it's just this big sigh of relief for the client who thought that their world was going to be over. And then they realize it's not. Ugh. And that is such a beautiful thing.
Oh my goodness. It's that sounds so beautiful. Like the story of the butterfly, like when it's getting out of the chrysalis, it's really painful. It's scary. You don't know what to expect. But then the butterfly's out there and it could get the blood to its wings and fly. So for the most part, if you do it right, then it's a positive experience. But if they were left to do it on their own without any support, then it could be very different.
Right. Yeah. I mean, because I've heard some interesting, you know, ideas for clients wanting to come out to their families that, like, you know, I don't want to say no to a client or disagree with them, but there are some things, you know, in my experience, it's like, well, you know, maybe we can think about consequences of that mm-hmm. in a particular way of coming out, because really, there are three things that I really think that when we have these experiences, we really need to do. Okay, so the first thing is to encourage connection with the client and their family member, to validate both of them, mm-hmm. and just encourage understanding. Mm-hmm. So I think that's kind of what we need to do in those situations.
Oh, wow. So that right there, and that has safety all throughout it, you know, just that encouragement and that support. So that's kind of what you, how you guide them through like the coming out process?
Yes. You know, and I think that once that hour, in some cases 2 hours are over, that parents kind of come down some from their state, you know, because they might even be in a state of hyperarousal.
Yes.
At first, and they've had, you know, that time for their autonomic nervous system to kind of cool off a little bit. So they're, you know, back with us fully and are able to, you know, really have digested what was just shared with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. And you kind of alluded to it earlier, like the fact that we got to really keep in mind the parents' experience through it all. And if it's new information to them, then they're going to take a little bit of time to be able to just kind of absorb it. And when we think of like the polyvagal theory, that a window of tolerance and then the hyperarousal and hypoarousal, you know, to be able to move back in from that hyperarousal to okay, now I can tolerate this, let's kind of process through it. That 2 hours probably, I can't imagine not doing something like that with a bigger block of time. Can't rush through that.
Right. Yeah. I don't think that any process has gone over 2 hours, maybe just a hair over. But I make sure that everyone is okay before they leave. And a lot of times they just go have lunch or something afterward, and have more time to connect and, you know, to discuss it in their own environment, but in a safe way.
Oh, that's so beautiful. That's so beautiful. Now, what's the fifth tip for clinicians?
The fifth tip is to be an advocate. Okay, so one thing is, you know, young people who are in the LGBTQ plus community, they really need advocacy in their schools and in their community.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can get involved with other business leaders who are affirming, or even be on a board of directors. That might be something that, you know, would really benefit your community.
Mm-hmm.
Is to be, you know, kind of the voice of, you know, the clinical side of things.
Absolutely. Like what you're doing right now, you're teaching us all like important things that we need to know. Without that knowledge being spread, there's some things that are left unknown and therefore left unchanged. So Absolutely. Being that advocate can happen in so many different ways.
Right. You know, and it could be as simple as getting involved with the local schools and getting a GSA put into place as a Gay Straight Alliance.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be a space for so many, you know, children, teenagers, to have that community at school and to have an advocate at school, because, you know, there has to be a teacher who is overseeing the GSA.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's important to maintain frequent contact with school administration if you're working with people who are school age. And also a bigger goal, really hard in the South, to advocate for more inclusive sex education.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's not that DVD from 1992 that's, they didn't have DVDs then, but that same recording that's been played years and year without that understanding that there's a broader picture of it, a broader understanding to include the LGBTQ plus community.
Right. You know, because I mean, in a lot of the Southeast, it's abstinence only kind of sex education. Yeah. And so that's another thing you can really do for your clients is to talk to them about these issues. Now, honestly, Jackie, in my experience of working with, you know, teenagers who are in the LGBTQ plus community, they're not usually sexually active, in my experience, but it's still important to talk about these things and to be able to be that safe place for them to talk about these issues and understand them. And as far as
point, it's not all about, and you know, it's not all about sex. It's not all about being sexually active. It's about identity and who they are and just being the authentic them.
Absolutely. And they're figuring that out, you know? So I think, you know, we need to give them the space to do that. And when working with schools, and working with parents, a lot of times you're going to see bullying come into play and you're going to see mental health declines of this population. So things that you can talk to school and parents about, because you're not there at all times with your client. So things you need to see and, you know, and to talk about with them is behavior changes, you know, like maybe they were outgoing before and now they're withdrawn, or discipline and behavior problems in school, declining grades, unexplained absences, sudden shifts and who's a friend and who's not a friend. I've seen that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And engagement with risky behaviors. So maybe drug use or a new sexual partner. And it might be out of character for that particular person.
Yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
We really need to support them there.
Yeah, it's like a good kind of, you think of like any behavior with anyone, there's something underneath it. And if we go underneath it rather than just at the surface trying to repattern that behavior, and we look at what's underneath causing it, if we can heal that and help that, that's where we're going to get the real long-lasting effective change.
Right. Absolutely, Jackie.
Mm. Oh, I love it. This is so very helpful. I am so excited for everybody to just kind of get these tips and to hear you. And I think, you know, every time I've only spoken with you a couple of times now, but you've had a big impact just on my work. I look at it through like a clearer lens, and I now have more resources and I feel more equipped and just kind of just like a better therapist. I really thank you for that.
Oh, thank you, Jackie. That means so much to me.
It's the truth. I don't say that to everybody. Only people that really match it. And you're really, I would say, the person that I've met like throughout forever that has just the most practical, actionable pieces that we could put into place with this, and you're a safe space. I think it's important to even kind of recognize that a lot of therapists, they don't necessarily have specialized training or know of the resources, but may be kind of nervous or scared to ask. They may think, oh, this is something I should already know, or I don't want to admit that I don't know this because it's going to make me look inadequate. And with you, I can ask you anything and you're just right there. I can imagine what it's like to be one of your clients. You are a safe space for a therapist to get information from.
I'm glad to hear that. I think it needs to be attainable. You know, it needs to be something that's digestible for all clinicians. Mm-hmm. This needs to be something that's just out there, because there aren't really a lot of resources for clinicians in this area. And so it is very frightening going in and working with this community, because there aren't a lot of trainings, there aren't a lot of books that really dive into those details of what it's actually like to work with the population.
And that's so true. And it's interesting, like you mentioned, being upfront on your Psychology Today and everything, even if people don't identify as, okay, this is my specialty to help people in the LGBTQ plus community, you can get a client that comes to you that presents with anxiety, that presents with depression, and they haven't told anyone. And then you're working with this client and they trust you and they feel that sacred, like, safety space in your presence. And then they tell you, then you need to know how to best support them. Even though you may not have known from the first time that you met them. So I think it's important for all clinicians to get trained in working with the LGBTQ plus community, regardless of whether they see that as their niche population that they work with or not.
Right. I've had a lot of clients tell me that they did not come out to previous counselors because they didn't feel safe enough.
Yeah. Yeah. And knowledge can help to kind of convey that, hey, you know, I am a safe space. And if you use terminology or just having a rainbow sticker on your mirror, that, I can't wait till I'm going to put one in my Amazon cart.
And, Safe Zone does trainings. You might be able to find one at a local university or something of that nature. So you might want to go on their website and they'll actually give you a sticker at the end of the training.
Oh, that's great. Okay, Safe Zone. I'll put that in the show notes as well. All right, so we're almost out of time, but I want to make sure that people know where to find you for like any consulting or to be able to, I know you have some amazing trainings yourself, to be able to access some of your trainings.
Yes. Okay, so I do have a website for my online continuing education portal. It's avail.institute.
Avail.institute.
Yes. Okay. And you can get all of my trainings on there. I have a 3.5-hour bundle on working with the LGBTQ plus community.
Oh.
And I will give a 50% off coupon on individual or bundles for the listeners here with the promo code PLAYTHERAPY.
Oh, that's great. Okay, I'll put that in the show notes. So with the promo code PLAYTHERAPY, we could get a 50% off of your bundle.
Yes, I want the information out there, Jackie. Okay. I think it's important.
You are beautiful. My goodness, I just got a wave of chills. I'm having a somatic experience just here. You're like, you truly are passionate on every angle that you can think of. I think about, like, especially like in the area where you're located, the need is the greatest. And like, if there's a really dark room and you have a flashlight, it's not a dark room anymore. You're the flashlight.
Yeah, I want to get to the point, Jackie, where people aren't going to have to be passing around my name in school halls, you know, like, hey, I know somebody. I want it to be where you can just go out, find a counselor, know that they're safe. All those spaces to go. That's what I want.
Wow. For the world. Oh my gosh, it's bringing tears to my eyes just thinking about someone in a school hallway trying to slip your number to someone else and saying, hey, this person can help.
Oh, it's happened so many times, Jackie. The first time it happened is like, oh, this is kind of strange. Oh. You know, but I mean, I feel like that's still happening with clients of all ages, you know. And I feel like, you know, the biggest thing is definitely word of mouth. That's where I get most of my clients from.
Yeah.
You know, and a couple months ago, I opened up my caseload again when I moved back to the U.S. And within just a few days, it was full again. And I had people saying, hey, I heard you're back. I've been waiting 2 years. I'm like, I really had no idea, you know, that it was this way. You know, and, you know, there was definitely an amount of guilt there.
To not be able to kind of do the work of like 50 of you, you know?
Right. Yes.
Like a feeling kind of like I'm inadequate because I can't help everyone.
Right. Because I don't think I'm anything special. I'm just.
Well, you're something special.
Not discriminating.
Right? Oh my goodness. And you have, I think if we kind of look at your kind of like your biggest gift, you have that passion, you have that love, and that's the soil that all this is growing from. Wow. You are amazing. Thank you, Samantha.
Thank you, Jackie.
Yeah, I'll catch you later. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Play Therapy Community Podcast. Be sure to check out the show notes for this episode and explore our growing members library of play therapy related resources at www.playtherapycommunity.com. Prepare to be informed, equipped, inspired, and supported.